Vous êtes à l'écoute de
Mosaic.
Hey everybody, I'm Anna.
I'm Alex, and you're listening to Mosaic.
All right, Alex, let's talk about religion and immigration for a little bit.
All right, let's do it.
So a lot of people come to America for religious reasons.
Definitely. Sometimes they're fleeing persecution. They want a place where they can practice their faith freely.
And once they're here, religion helps connect immigrants and keep their traditions alive.
Right. But what if you're an immigrant who moves to a new place and there are no churches or temples there for your religion? What if you and your family members are the only people in your entire state who practice your faith?
In this episode of Mosaic, we meet someone in that exact situation.
Nobody knows who you are and why you are here. And I didn't know what to do, where to go. If I walk in a block or two, I can be lost. I came from Syria.
If you visit enough organizations in Providence that help new immigrants, sooner or later, you'll probably bump into this guy.
Hello, this is me, Kamal Elias.
Kamal is an Arabic interpreter from Iraq. He translates for other immigrants at doctor's offices, appointments at social service agencies, and even trips to the DMV.
Whatever appointment they have, I tell them what to do, get them into orientation sometimes, how to use the bus, and how to go to the markets, how to buy, how to purchase, how to do. I like to help people. Yeah, I like that help.
We first meet Kamal at the Refugee Dream Center. He's there to help translate interviews for us.
Kamal is a man who likes to stay busy. And when you talk with him, you get the sense that he's always been that way.
Kamal has lived in the U.S. for about 2.5 years now. But he's originally from Besheka, Iraq. It's a town in the northern part of the country, northeast of Mosul.
In Iraq, Kamal is a man who wears many hats. He's an interpreter for the U.S. Army. For a year, he helps soldiers and doctors at a hospital communicate with Iraqi patients.
It's a job he basically falls into one day.
My mom got sick, badly sick, and she got a stroke, and we rushed her to the hospital. And at that time, I met the troops. They were injured people here and there, and nobody would interpret for them. They were young kids. So I volunteered, wanted to help.
In Iraq, Kamal also teaches English, and he does handiwork on the side as a plumber and an electrician. In northern Iraq, Kamal says you can fry an egg on the ground. So he fixes a lot of air conditioners.
And with all this going on, Kamal also finds the time to earn a master's degree studying ancient literature.
As he'll proudly tell you, Kamal is the first person on the Arabian Peninsula to write a thesis on love in the work of the Greek poetess Sappho.
I wrote all this, everything I did.
One of the few possessions he has with him from Iraq is a hardcover copy of his master's thesis.
Chapter 1 is about love, definition of love, and the kinds of love. Chapter 2, erotic love in Sappho's poem, because he talks about erotic love.
Beyond analyzing the nuances of ancient love, Kamal has other passions. He's a religious person. He's part of a small religious minority in Iraq, the Yazidis.
Yazidi people follow this monotheistic religion rooted in ancient ideas that some believe predate the Abrahamic faiths.
The Yazidis, we consider ourselves to be an old religion that's related to the Sumerian and Babylonian civilization. In those times where the sun was the center of the worship, we believe in God and we live in peace, and we love people. We pray for the peace, for the peaceful of our neighbors, our friends, of all others.
Yazidis pray several times a day, and they worship at temples. They fast in December, and they hold ceremonies around the changing of the seasons.
Growing up, Kamal learns his religion like every other Yazidi, through oral tradition.
It's delivered to you when you listen to from your dad and from your grandpa and from your grandma. And it has been taught in that way. So an Yazidi is taught how to practice, how to worship, and how to learn his duties, being a Yazidi.
Because there aren't texts for people outside the Yazidi faith to read, there's a lot of misunderstanding about the religion.
Yeah, Yazidis believe in a single God, but they're also taught that seven angels protect the earth.
And some non-Yazidis have come to falsely interpret that to mean that Yazidis worship a fallen angel that's really Satan.
And that has led to centuries of persecution.
We suffered a lot of that.
After the U.S. invades Iraq in 2003, Kamal says discrimination against Yazidis gets worse. In 2014, it reaches unfathomable levels of brutality.
And these terrorists have been especially barbaric towards religious minorities, including Christian and Yazidis, a small and ancient religious sect.
In August of that year, ISIS, or ISIL, fighters invade Sinjar, a town in northern Iraq with a large Yazidi population. They execute and kidnap Yazidis.
And chilling reports describe ISIL militants rounding up families, conducting mass executions, and enslaving Yazidi women.
My people ran away, fled for their lives to the mountains where they were left for 7 days, 8 days without water, without anything, without food. And young kids, young children started dying because of that.
The United Nations estimates that thousands of Yazidis are either killed or kidnapped after the ISIS invasion. Women are raped and sold as slaves.
The UN comes to formally label what happens to the Yazidis a genocide.
How brutal it was, this incident. It was very, very horrible. And what can I say about this? I can't say nothing because I am out of words.
Kamal is in Bashika, west of Sinjar, in August 2014. And soon after the invasion of Sinjar, he hears word that ISIS is headed for his town.
At midnight, he flees with his brothers and some friends. ISIS arrives in Bashika 3 hours later.
Eventually, Kamal makes it safely to the city of Erbil, but his hometown is destroyed. Homes, buildings, shrines, everything.
In Bashika, it's known as the city of olive trees. ISIS burned all the olive trees. Some of the olive trees were 100 years old and even older. It was all green. And now when you check the map and have a picture of some Bashika, it was all dry because they burned everything.
After the genocide, Kamal and his brothers and sisters don't feel safe in Iraq anymore. So they apply to be relocated to the U.S. as refugees.
Then in 2016, Kamal gets a chance to visit Bashika after Kurdish Peshmerga forces liberate his hometown.
He goes to his apartment and sees it's virtually a total loss. He can't salvage much more than a copy of his Sappho thesis.
But while he's there, Kamal gets some very good news from the International Organization for Migration, or IOM.
I received a call from IOM. Well, prepare yourself because the coming week is your travel day. You're going to move to the U.S.
Kamal and his sisters are getting priority because of the work they did as interpreters supporting U.S. troops in Iraq. They're being resettled in Providence, Rhode Island.
Kamal flies into JFK Airport in February 2017.
He's happy and excited. It's nighttime, and he's amazed by the view of New York City.
Kamal's also a little intimidated. He's thinking, how does somebody make it in a place like this?
But he doesn't stay in New York long. In a few days, he's driven up to Providence, where his sisters have already been resettled.
And Kamal has done all sorts of research on Providence, what languages people speak here, what people do for work, what kinds of educational opportunities there are, even what crime is like in the city.
But when he gets to Providence, it's still really foreign to him.
Everything is different. Nobody would speak even your language. And nobody knows who you are and why you are here. And I didn't know what to do, where to go. I have no directions. If I walk in a block or two, I'm going to be lost.
And there's something else really new about Providence.
Right. All his life, Kamal has lived around Yazidi people.
They pray together, fast together. They go to these big celebrations together. The Yazidi community in Iraq is tight-knit, and it's a big part of his life.
But in Rhode Island, Kamal says, there are no Yazidis. Outside his family, in their home, literally none.
We are the only family here, the Yazidi family, living here in Rhode Island.
It's a challenge. But even though he might be physically apart from other Yazidis, Kamal quickly realizes he can still draw on his faith for strength.
Every Yazidi is told to be optimistic, to feel that tomorrow is going to be better. We believe that the night, the darkness of the night, will not last forever. After the night, the new day is going to start and the sun is going to rise again.
Kamal likes to start his day reciting a prayer in Kurdish, the most common language spoken among Yazidis.
The idea of this is to welcome the new day, the new morning, the new sunrise, we call the new day, in full positivity, to receive that day, to receive the gifts of that day.
Kamal says the prayer gives him strength. He feels like he doesn't need to worry. And it helps him focus on being productive each day.
If you think positively, so you're going to work positively. And you're going to do your job, fulfill your duties positively and complete them in a good manner. That power, I got that power from doing the worship in the morning and I start my day after that.
After being here only a few weeks, Kamal starts looking for work.
When Kamal first gets to Rhode Island, he's getting help from the Diocese of Providence. And one thing he notices is that the staff people there need help translating for Arabic-speaking immigrants. So he says, hey, I can do that.
It's a volunteer gig, but Kamal says it's a good fit.
I believe that other people deserve to be helped because we were helped by the U.S. government, by the IOM authorities, by the United Nations, and I'm trying to help others. And then they're going to start their life here from a point that I could say I helped a little bit.
What Kamal does next is he uses the volunteer position at the Diocese of Providence as a springboard for other paying jobs.
He starts working at hospitals and medical centers as an interpreter, and then he begins teaching at the Genesis Center. It's this adult education center in Providence.
And this all happens within about a year of arriving in Rhode Island.
Kamal also keeps looking for extra positions. He says he's going to be starting soon as an English teacher at Dorcas International.
And he's meeting lots of people.
Everywhere I go, you can ask about me, and they can tell me they know me. And I'd like to make relationships here, like Americans and Dominican Republic friends, and I have Congolian community friends.
Kamal says he likes to go to parties, out to restaurants, or even just walks with his new friends.
And one thing that's also helps Kamal adjust to life in the U.S. is maintaining a connection with other Yazidis, even if he can't see them in person.
Right. So one thing you notice when you're with Kamal is that his cell phone is really important to him.
Galaxy S8.
So it does a lot for you, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kamal will stop mid-sentence to pull up Facebook on his phone and show you pictures of other Yazidis, or a video of a celebration at a sacred temple, or a song someone's posted.
It's a friend always makes live videos. Just the music.
So social media and the internet has really made you able to stay in contact with your people
That's
and your
right.
culture and everything.
Okay, this is some of the...
So that's people gathered around a temple and the
temple.
Song.
I told you, this is a temple.
Both Sinjar, Iraq, and Kamal's hometown of Bashika have been liberated from ISIS.
And now, from his apartment in the U.S., Kamal can watch the rebuilding process.
He sees homes going up and sacred places being rebuilt.
I feel very happy. People are starting gradually to build their life again. And I'm feeling proud of those people, those young boys and girls. They have that intention. They have that ambition.
Kamal is also able to share his life in America with Yazidis back in Iraq.
Yeah, and as we told you before, Kamal is passionate about literature. Here's a poem he wrote.
Tell them to go to Kersi, to touch the rocks, and to kiss the grounds and the valleys. Those valleys, they were blessed by the touch of those young feet, barefoot people.
Kamal writes about the experience of the Yazidi people, and then he posts his poetry on Facebook.
This poem is about the Yazidi families that fled to the Kersi Valley in 2014, and then were stuck there without food or water.
The crack tips seeking for water. I ask you to listen, to keep listening silently to the whispers of those people. It is still there, and it's going to be there forever.
Kamal says he writes about the genocide so that people will remember it.
Because in that period, I believe that humanity stopped and history stopped, everything stopped. You've seen children, young children, 2 years old, 1 year old, is dead because of thirst, is dead because of being Yazidi.
After the 2014 genocide, Yazidis fled Iraq and spread out across the globe.
Many were resettled in Canada. Other large groups moved to Germany, France, Australia, and other countries.
Several thousand Yazidis made it to the U.S. and settled in Nebraska. That's the U.S. state with the highest number of Yazidis.
Kamal knows Yazidi people who resettled there. He keeps in touch with them online, and he says he wants to go there someday to visit.
He says at some point he might also move to Nebraska permanently.
Maybe one day I'm going to move there to join them. It's better to be with your people because you have the same traditions, we have the same customs, we have the same, you have everything. So I would like to join them one day.
For now, Kamal has some concrete short-term goals.
Yeah, he wants to go back to school. He's not sure how many of his credits from Iraq will transfer, but he says he wants to study English or maybe education.
He also wants to get married and start a family. He wants to become a citizen. And he's still hoping that his brothers and their families will be able to join him in the U.S. sometime soon.
Our family is going to be united again, as we were there in Iraq. I hope so. And I wish today before tomorrow. Because the sooner they get here, the sooner they learn how life is good here and how life is peaceful and how life is prosperous. To be in the United States. Being in the U.S., being in America is a great chance. And I can say it is a great incident happened to me. It was a great moment.
Mosaic is a production of the Publix Radio, edited by Sally Isley with production help from James Baumgartner and Aaron Selbig. Our original music is by Bryn Bliska. Tori Malatia is the general manager of the Publix Radio. I'm Ana Gonzalez.
And I'm Alex Nunes. Thanks for listening. Support for this podcast comes from Carnegie Corporation of New York. Supporting innovations in education, democratic engagement, and the advancement of international peace and security at carnegie.org.